This is Fresh Air. There's a big Earth Day concert in Washington tonight. On the bill is the Australian rock group Midnight Oil. They're a band that refuses to compromise their values. They've never accepted corporate sponsorship, and they used to go so far as putting gaffer tape over the company names on their amps. The Oils, as they're called, have recorded songs about nuclear disarmament, asbestos mining, and after the wreck of the Exxon Valdez, they did an impromptu concert on Manhattan's 6th Avenue in front of Exxon headquarters. In 1986, they were invited to perform for the Aborigines in the Australian outback. They've since written many songs based on that experience. Before we meet lead singer Peter Garrett, let's hear a new one from their latest album, Earth and Sun and Moon. This is about one of the last Tasmanian Aborigines, a woman named Truganini.
The backbone of this country is broken. The land is cracked and the land is sore. Farmers are hanging on by their fingertips. We're cursed and stumbled across that shore.
Midnight Oil's lead singer Peter Garrett spoke with Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet. He told her about their tour through the Australian outback.
I have an abiding memory because there's no noise out there except the noise of nature. And there's no real signs of what we would see as being quite typical 1980s, 1990s life. I mean, there are no supermarkets, there are no covered roads, there are no phone boxes. There is trash, but not trash in the way that we would see it. There are wrecks of cars and humpy buildings. And, of course, there's never been a noise as loud as even a small-time rock band in the desert at night when the wind has stopped and you can hear the sound of a lizard from, you know, half a mile away scraping its stomach across a rock. You can imagine when we started to play what the noise was like. And in the furthest area of remoteness, which is where the Pintabi tribe are, and they were a tribe that were in the Guinness Book of Records in 1986 or 87 as being the poorest people on the planet. They were the ones that adopted us into their family. And the night that we played in a huge, open, bare red rock plain, about as far imaginable away from anything as imaginable, I remember we've played the first three or four chords and about 20 of the older women sitting out the back went fleeing back into their humpies with their hands over their heads. So, I mean, you know, they laughed when I danced, and we did sort of semi-workshops and had meetings during the day so that we could get an understanding of what was going on, and actually found that sitting around the campfire at night telling stories and drinking cups of tea and just playing guitar and playing Rolling Stones records was and old country songs was often quite much more successful in the show.
When you went back to Sydney, you wrote some songs based on the experience of being in the outback, and these songs ended up on your album Diesel and Dust. I'd like to play a song off that record. What song do you feel best captures what you got from that experience?
Well, there are a couple on the album, but I think I would take a song like Warrakoona.
What can you tell us about this song, Warrakoona?
Warrakoona is a little town just across the border between South Australia and Western Australia. It's near an area where the British actually did nuclear testing in Australia in the 50s. It's a town where you have to drive for at least 11 or 12 hours to actually arrive there. And we came out to play to them. They weren't expecting us to play because we had no permissions to go into those particular areas. And we ran into a friend who was working as a lawyer for Aboriginal people there who suggested that we ought to play in Western Australia. We had a day to get there. We arrived and we played a concert to eight people, a camel and about seven stray dogs, because there'd been a football game on and they'd all flown, I must say, not driven, 3 hours to the north to play football. but it was a place of remarkable ancient beauty and kind of modern tatty settlement, but the people had a very strong spirit.
Well, why don't we listen to Warrakoona? That was Midnight Oil from their 1987 album Diesel and Dust. And they have a new album out called Earth and Sun and Moon. And Midnight Oil's lead singer Peter Garrett is here today. How do you work out politics within the band? It seems to me that there's so many group decisions that you have to make, from, you know, what benefits you're going to play and what issues you're going to get involved in and how you conduct your business and what stand you take in your song lyrics. Like, do you make all these decisions through consensus, and how do you do that? Do you have long meetings?
Legendarily long meetings, it must be said. We've met for weekends without pause.
About what? Like, give me an example of something that took a whole weekend to decide.
To agonize over? Let me think.
Song lyrics?
No, we certainly wouldn't committee on song lyrics. But, I mean, we've had longer arguments about tempos than we have had about words. Do you know what I mean?
Right. What have you figured out about how to put a message in a song but not turn people off who don't want to be preached at?
Well, I haven't figured anything out about it because one of my nicknames in Midnight Oil is The Preacher. I'm cautioning everybody to be careful here. I don't accept the view that you turn people off with slogans. I've yet to see any evidence of it, but everybody seems to feel that way. I think that's just part of the prevalent semi-liberal, semi-repressive, wimpy way in which we all conduct our public and our private lives in the 80s and the 90s. But we don't actually sit down, and I must repeat it, we don't actually sit down and figure out how to get the message out. In fact, the message is very much emblematic or symbolic. It's not actually the raison d'etre. We have to be able to come up with a primal rhythm, usually in 4-4. We have to come up with chords, and we have to come up with an emotional response to something. It might be described in political language without getting into semiotics. That's what happens when you have graduates writing pop songs. I mean, we really ought to be grunting and doing and RRRing, but we've just gotten to the point in language where we probably do a little more than that.
You were just finishing up your law degree when you saw an ad for a band looking for a singer. What possessed you to answer that ad?
I was desperate. I couldn't get a job. I was working on building sites, and I thought I might be able to go surfing during the day.
Now, I read an article in Musician magazine that said that you didn't really know how to sing when you first joined the band.
There's no argument about that at all.
Well, how did you learn how to sing?
Well, I didn't really. I just closed my eyes and, you know, opened it up and let it happen. And I'm still trying to work on it, you know.
Did you sound a lot different back then than you do now?
Yeah, I sounded absolutely awful. Kind of this nasally, whiny, kind of high-pitched voice sort of squawking, you know, in between the guitars and occasionally spitting out a bit of polemic. It wasn't all, I mean, I'm amazed 5,000 people bought the first record, you know.
When you perform, you're one of the most energetic frontmen of any band. In fact, I read that you can't use a wireless mic because you dance so hard you shatter the transistor crystals in it. Is that true?
You've been talking to my crew. They won't let me use one.
Well, a friend of mine, he saw you recently, and he said he got exhausted just watching you. Uh-huh. And he was wondering if it really takes a toll on you.
Physically?
Yeah.
To a point, I suppose it does. I mean, it's not something that I think about much. An oil's performance is a very absolute full immersion, you know, there's no doubt about that. And I do really strain every fibre to get the thing working to a level that I feel happy about. Quite often they're pushing me a little hard too, and that's good. And we've had oxygen at shows and smashed things up, and I've been carried off now and then. But
did you say you've had oxygen at shows?
Yeah.
For you?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, we've just come from Brazil and we had to have it there. But that's not because I've mindlessly kind of lost control and just, you know, gone into sort of marathon mode. I think it's just that I'm just pretending that I'm 17 and I'm not, you know.
Well, you're in your late 30s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, how much longer do you think you can do that?
6 or 8 months. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a really interesting question for all of us, you know, how long can he go? And I mean, I feel marvelous, you know, I feel really superbly healthy. I'm very blessed to have good health and good constitution. And so long as so long as I can feel the kick drum, you know, belting me in the back, I seem to be okay.
Why don't we take a short break? We'll be back in just a moment. This is Fresh Air. Peter Garrett of the band Midnight Oil is my guest. You actually ran for the Senate in Australia, and you almost won.
Yes.
Why did you run?
Oh, well, I ran because I was asked. We had a situation in the country in the mid-80s where people were very concerned about the build-up of nuclear armaments, the visits of nuclear-powered ships and submarines, testing at Mururoa by the French, testing above-ground testing by the Chinese, and a fledgling anti-nuclear party sort of flowered very quickly in the various states, and various people stood, and I was a Senate candidate, I beg your pardon, in New South Wales, which is where the city of Sydney is. And, I mean, it was an interesting experience. We had a lot of artists, writers, kids involved, and even though the structure of the thing was quite flawed and, you know, delightfully amateurish, the sorts of principles and the things that we were talking about, we were able to get. It was a very boring election, so we got quite a lot of media. We had some radio ads, which some friends put together from an advertising ad. In fact, Peter Carey, the Australian novelist, who has worked and lived in the United States, is an old friend, and he came in and wrote some slogans and some advertising copy for us. And we it was just a real communal thing of people just getting together and, I might say it was altogether a party, but just enjoying themselves and throwing stuff out into the system to see what would happen. And I concentrated my fire on the foreign minister and just went after him, you know, like a tiger dog or a cattle dog, and wouldn't let go of his heel until eventually we got to have the big head-to-head on telly and you know, call him out on some of these issues.
What would have happened if you had won? Had you ever thought the whole thing through?
We'd thought it through to an extent. I had a couple of pet pacifologists.
What did you say?
I had a couple of pet political scientists who had basically said to me that worked the Senate system through to me. And it's a preferential system, and it's too complicated even to describe on your radio station for thinking people. But in effect, what happened was the Democrats and the Republicans, the Labor and the Liberal Party in Australia, gave their preferences to one another, which is something they normally don't do. Normally they give them to everybody else except each other. But in this occasion, they gave them to one another directly, which had the effect of derailing all my votes. It's quite complicated. Legal. It was quite technically legal. And even though I got a very high popular vote, the effect of their giving one another each other's preferences was to prevent me from taking a seat in the Senate and doing me a favour, by the way, which I thought would happen. I was advised it would happen, and I was glad it happened.
I mean, had you thought, what if you had won? Would you have quit the band? Like, what would you have had to do?
I wouldn't have quit the band at all. Otherwise, I would have gone insane. And I think I just would have been a rogue senator for 3 years until they booted me out, you know.
Well, I'd like to end with Drums of Heaven, which is off the new album. Is there anything you'd like to say about this song?
It's just an interesting meander through semi-apocalyptic imagery and swirling acoustic and electric guitars, ending up with Midnight Oil sort of, you know, bouncing from planet to planet in a rock song.
Well, let's listen to it. And thanks a lot for coming by and doing the interview today.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
By the time the holy anthem is falling from me, and tears of crocodile water sun. By the time you make up your mind, if ever you do, I hear the drums of heaven too. By the time you make up your mind, remember this too, I hear the drums of heaven too.
Peter Garrett is the lead singer of the Australian band Midnight Oil. He spoke to Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet. The Oil's new album is called Earth and Sun and Moon. This is Fresh Air.